Thank you very much for that kind introduction. So my name is Mona Sarfati, and I teach at Thomas Jefferson University in the School of Population Health there, and I'm also part of the Department of Family and Community Medicine. And by way of introduction, Pennsylvania had a statewide chronic care initiative for several years, and there were collaboratives that were held all over the state, and many practices participated and learned the components of the chronic care model and then sought to implement those components into practices. And we reported monthly on a whole range of diabetes indicators as a part of that demonstration grant program. And so it was in the context of that that this work was done. And so I was very involved in that. We had a team from my practice, which is Jefferson Family Medicine Associates, that was part of that demonstration program for the full 3 years. So I have no relationships to disclose, no conflicts of interest, that is. And I'm going to talk about group visits. And one of the things that we pursued as a part of that collaborative experience was a group visit within our practice. And we're now entering the fourth year of providing that group visit. So chronic disease is growing, especially diabetes. And it's taking up a larger and larger percentage of our interest and also of the funds that we have to spend on healthcare. And there's a very large gap between the ideal and the actual care that we're able to provide. We need new ways to deliver care. And some of the deficiencies in the current manage of chronic disease includes the fact that practitioners are very rushed. And may not be able to follow established guidelines or not be able to spend the time with patients that they would like to improve the likelihood of medication adherence. There's often a lack of care coordination, so patients may go to endocrinologists, primary care, cardiologists, other specialties, and we have difficulty keeping everybody on the same page, so to speak. Also, lack of active follow-up to ensure the best outcomes. Patients are typically not adequately trained to be able to manage their own illness. Okay, so this is a depiction of the chronic care model. Many of you are probably familiar with it, and this was developed by Ed Wagner back in the 1980s, and then conference was held here on the West Coast in the 1990s, in which there was consensus reached and a lot of research examined to try to determine whether these pieces were evidence-based or not. So there has been a tremendous amount of work to look at the evidence base. And the center of the chronic care model is the informed, activated patient and the prepared, proactive practice team working together productively for better outcome. And then that's within the context of the health system and the community. Within the health system are the information systems, which allow us to know what else the patient has had done, and that's essentially your electronic medical record or whatever other information is available to the clinical team, the decision support, which really refers to the guidelines for practicing, the delivery system design, and then on the community side, has usually been where self-management support has been available. So if it's weight loss or exercise programs or, you know, whatever the other pieces of self-care that are important have generally been done within the context of the community. This is a list of the research that's been done. This is based on an article from JAMA by Sharjania, in which they reviewed the things that have been shown to make a difference in improving diabetes care. And you can see there that there's quite a few of them: changes in the team structure, case management, patient reminders, patient education, electronic registries, clinical evaluation, facilitated relay of information, self-management, et cetera, clinician reminders. So there's quite a few things. And the big challenge is how to put those into practice in a way that they really make a difference. So why group visit? Well, there have been improved health outcomes that have been shown to stem from group visits, and also quality of life outcomes. They have been shown to reduce emergency room visits, hospitalizations, and overall costs. And so there's a literature that's accumulated on the benefits of group visits. One of the important roles we felt that the group visit could play was the self-management education and support. And this is really about a collaborative process in which the healthcare team helps people with the chronic disease to get the knowledge, problem solving, and coping skills they need to successfully self-manage the disease and the related conditions. So we established a weekly group visit at our practice. We have a large practice and we're academically based, which has definitely made it a little bit easier for us to do this. We call it DISH, Diabetes Information and Support for Your Health, and it happens every Friday morning from 8:30 to 11, and we have a routine that we follow in DISH that's well known to the patients who attend and to the provider team that participates, and we cycle the topics within a month, so every month the topics repeat. We tried to make this easy for everyone to remember. By virtue of having it cycle like that, it's very interdisciplinary. We have a group education piece, there's a group support piece, and it starts with a medical component, a review of the patient chart, that can be done by the medical student, or we often have resident physicians doing this, and they find out, you know, whether the patient has had the tests that they need, whether they're on the medications that they should be on. Even before that, the medical assistant does take their vitals and adds a monofilament exam if that hasn't been done. So then there's the update in the chart, and then we move into the patient education session, which is an hour. And then after that, there's time for self-management action planning by individual patients. And during that time, we also add immunizations that the patient may be lacking, training in the use of glucometer if they don't really have or use their glucometer, and in insulin administration. And so that last half hour to 45 minutes is extremely well utilized for a number of services. So how has it affected some of the outcomes that we've been measuring? So a study was done in which we matched a group that had gone to the DISH visits with a group that had not attended DISH, who were diabetics in the same practice. And we looked at demographics, comorbidities at the treatment, so we tried to match or we tried to measure. And the selection criteria was age 55 to, when we compared the DISH patients, we wanted to make sure that they were equivalent, so we looked at the prescribing history, whether they were on an ACE or an ARB, whether they were on aspirin and had been prescribed a statin. And then we compared the A1C values, less than 7, 8, or 9 or greater. We looked at the LDLs, but less than 130, less than 100 also. And then we looked at blood pressures and whether they were less than 130 over 80 and less than 140 over 90, and we looked at weight loss as well. And so this is a schematic of the design. You can see there's a DISH group and a non-DISH group. We made some baseline measurements. Then there was the period in which they attended or didn't attend DISH, and then there were follow-up measurements after that. The participants had to be at least 18, have type 2, at least one visit to the practice in that time period. And each participant in DISH was matched with 4 comparison patients. So some of the matching covariates included the age groups, gender, race, ethnicity, and zip code, which in our areas and many places is a fairly reasonable measure of socioeconomic group. Some of the independent variables that we looked at included body mass index, whether they had diagnoses of hypertension, hyperlipidemia, whether they were smoker, number of times they had visited the office, whether they had some of the other tests like the microalbumin, what type of insurance they had, and what kind of treatment they were getting. Also aspirin, whether they were on ACEs or ARBs, and whether they were prescribed a statin. Again, the outcome variables were the A1C, the LDLs, the blood pressures, and the weight. And in addition to looking at the absolute A1C, we also looked at the change in A1C. So for the analysis, we compared the baseline characteristics. We did measure some process indicators and then looked at the outcome variables and used the Cochran-Mantel-Hansel statistic as our statistical test, and we used as the level of significance a p-value less than 0.05. SAS Enterprise Guide was the tool. So this is what we found in terms of the characteristics. The patient population of both the intervention and the control groups were largely female. Those are the percentages there. They were largely African American, largely over the age of 45. You can see the percentage that were smokers and the percentage that were obese. This is the comorbidities. The dish group is in pink, the comparison group in yellow. And so hypertension, hyperlipidemia, depression, microalbumin, et cetera. You see the percentages there. And for some of them, the dish patients actually, you know, had greater comorbidities, and some things they were a little bit less. And this is the prescribing history. So statins were prescribed for the dish and the control group, the ACEs and ARBs and the aspirins. There was a statistical difference in the extent to which they were prescribed aspirin, but the other differences didn't meet statistical significance. So this is a comparison now of some of the endpoints. And you see the dish group and the comparison group for each one of these A1C endpoints, and the baseline and the follow-up. So for the dish group, you can see the baseline for A1C less than 7, you know, went from under 40% to 56%. You can see what the difference was for the comparison group. Similarly, A1C less than 8, the before and after for the dish, the before and after for the comparison, and for A1C greater than 9. And for the group less than 7, didn't quite reach statistical significance, but it was there was a trend in that direction. P-value was 0.08. We also looked then at whether there was the absolute decline in the A1C for the dish group and the comparison group, and that was statistically significant. So the dish group had a larger decline in their A1C than the comparison group did. Similarly, we looked at the LDL before and after, and so for the dish group, comparison group, for both less than 130 and less than 100, you can see there the before and after. And this did not reach statistical significance, but there was a significant, I mean, there was a change, a larger change for the dish group than the comparison group. And when we looked at blood pressures, there was a larger change for the dish group than the comparison group for blood pressure less than 140 over 90, and that did reach statistical significance. And we felt actually that, you know, some of the changes reached significance, some did not, but that there was a trend in the direction of improvement for the dish group and in almost every category, you know, excepting the reaching a blood pressure less than 130 over 80. So it was something else to take note of, not to overplay that, but to take note of it. Weight changes, there were some weight gain, there was some weight loss. There was not enough of a trend there for us to show the same kind of improvement as in some of the other indicators. So you can see for the greater than 10-pound weight loss, the percentage for the dish group was 28%. For the comparison group, 17%, but that also was not statistically significant. And when we looked at what really happened, it was all over the map, so somewhat more difficult to characterize. So in conclusion, our program was associated with a clear improvement in blood pressure and also a statistically significant drop in the A1C, and may have the potential to improve the proportion of patients achieving other measured outcomes. Study limitations are that this wasn't a randomized controlled study. It was matched 4-to-1, but it wasn't randomized, and so we would have to say it was a quasi-experimental design. We didn't have follow-up data on all of the participants, the numbers are there, and this has now been published in the Journal of Urban Health. And this was the evaluation of DISH during its implementation year, so it's the very first year. We're now entering our fourth year, and we're looking forward to continuing to evaluate this data. Currently, we're doing a project where we're attempting to look longitudinally at the patients who have participated in the DISH visits to see if we can understand what happens over time for that group. And that's one of the unanswered questions in the literature. So since the study was done, we've had over 400 patients who have attended DISH. There's been a lot more time devoted to the action planning piece, as I think we have learned more about the benefits of action planning, and there's been more literature documenting how important that is. We've also now added medical students to the mix of those who participate. When I said it was interdisciplinary at the beginning, I didn't mention that we have a pharmacist who's there every week. So we have a pharmacist. One of the cycle presentations is done by a psychologist who talks about coping and stress reduction. We have a diabetes certified, educator who does the educational component. And so we really have tried to make this very much an interdisciplinary activity that brings in the expertise of multiple people in the healthcare team in a way that can really benefit the patients. The medical assistants are involved. They do training on the glucometers. And that in itself has really been a very interesting experience. So our plans are to continue evaluating. We'd like to establish an evening group visit if we can, because there are a lot of patients we know who are not getting there, despite the fact that they would like to just because they have jobs during the day. The practice has 2,300 diabetics, and only 400 have been able to attend, and we know that many others would attend if it were in the evening or on the weekend, and we haven't quite worked that out yet. I also want to make sure to mention that we have a bit of a business case for how we do this, because since there is physician time during the course of the morning, and we have every patient at least check in with a physician, and there is this chart review, we are able to bill for this visit, not under the group visit code, but under the physician visit code. And so we are able to bring in revenue. For those patients who have a copay as part of their insurance, they're expected to pay a copay when they come to these visits. For those who don't have a copay, obviously it's not an issue. We were quite worried about that. First year we didn't have a copay, and then we subsequently implemented it. And we have been watching to see whether there was a decrease in attendance, and we don't think that it has affected the attendance. That's it, and thank you for listening. This is a really interesting, I think, area for development of the health delivery system, and so I hope you all have a chance to think and talk more about it.
Thank you. Dr. Sarfati has to leave, I think, so if there are any quick questions that she can take before she leaves.
Okay, sure. I'm going to try to get out before the mob makes it impossible. Yes. I'm sorry. This visit is open to any of the patients in the practice who wish to participate. So we have a sign in the waiting room every, week saying what topic is going to be that week, and any patient who's interested is free to come. And so we generally have between 10 and 20 patients. We feel like we haven't quite reached the capacity that we could actually accommodate up to about 25. So it's a group experience, and part of that group experience is time when the educator delivers her presentation. time for the patients to interact and, you know, and share their experiences. And we also do have a qualitative evaluation that we've done, and so we have a lot of very rich quotes from patients about what it is they've gained from the experience, and many of them are quite clear about the fact that hearing from other people who have the same condition has been very important for them, you know, realizing that they weren't alone and hearing about how other people have dealt with some of the same problems that they had. So one of the questions out there in the literature also is, what is it about group visits that is so useful? And I've attended almost every visit myself since we started, and I think that that support piece, you know, is definitely of benefit to those who attend. Other things people have said are that they've had more time. Their physician doesn't have the time to talk to them in depth the way, you know, they're able to get at the group visit. So the physician told them what to do, but maybe didn't tell them how to do it or didn't give them a full sense of why they needed to do it. And these are some of the extra things that they learn over time at the group visit. And we encourage people to go back. They felt it complemented what their primary care physician was doing. And we encourage them to go keep those visits, go back to those visits, and that collaboration between, you know, the group visit and the provider is extremely important. So we see this as all complementary, you know, and as all a necessary piece of really taking good care of people who have diabetes.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Okay, thank you.